This is a production of Cornell University.
Get on our way.
Here you go.
Thanks. Call the meeting to order at about 5:40. And this is the, I believe, third meeting of GPSA on September 24th. Here in Mallett Hall, spelled correctly. Our first order of business is roll call and introduction of voting members again. So I'll just go through this, and please tell me if you are here or not. Alex Black?
I'm here.
Awesome. Mia Tuto?
Yes.
Awesome. Spelled correctly, right? Fantastic. Yep. Shrivani Gandhi? Awesome. Bill Kreuzer?
Here.
Eric Smith?
Yep.
Giovanna Deniz?
Yes.
Jonathan Hill?
Here.
Great. Liz Newberry?
Here.
Awesome, you made it. Fantastic. Mitch Payne, I'm here. Nicole is away this time. Alex Moore?
Here.
Fantastic. Jennifer Drews?
Here.
Awesome. Matt Holden?
Here.
Awesome. Xiaoting Zhao? No? Okay. Rob Moore?
Here.
Okay. Eric is unfortunately just had surgery, so hopefully he'll join us at our next meeting. Han Liu?
Here.
Fantastic. Drew Enders?
Here.
Awesome. And the Johnson School voting person? One of you? We have, Monet, you're it for now. we have four new people from Johnson who are joining us, three voting members and three non-voting field reps and one voting member, and they're still deciding who the voting member is. So we'll have them join us next time as a voting member. Fantastic. Before we go into Rebecca's presentation, we have a couple guests that are here. Susan Riley and Linda Mujani are from the Housing Services. Susan is the Associate Director of Residential Programs, and Linda is the Graduate Residence Manager at Hasbrook, Hughes, and Thurston. So I'm going to have them just introduce themselves and kind of say what they do. So Susan and Linda, please. Okay. Great, thanks. And I think Linda will be joining us at our future meeting, so please introduce yourself and ask about Hasbrook. It's a great place. And Hughes and Thurston, which I know not much about otherwise. great, and I'm hoping to have a broader discussion about housing at one of our meetings upcoming, so we can talk about housing as part of the GCI and hear a little bit more from the on-campus housing and the affiliated entities more about it. So with that, we'll move on into Rebecca Robbins' presentation. Rebecca was the chair of the Student Advocacy Committee last year and did some great work on graduate mental health. So she will take over from here.
Cool.
Okay, I'll give you this if you want to use it.
I love them some animation.
I don't know if they will play. I'm sorry. I didn't know they were there.
Awesome. All right. Good evening. My name is Rebecca. I was the chair of the advocacy committee that Yevgeny is chairing this year. And last year we sat down with the committee, and one of our first kind of big questions was, look, graduate students can be an underserved population here at Cornell, and they have a lot of concerns. And the primary way in which the advocacy used to, or committee used to collect information from our community was hosting a town hall. So that is, you know, one approach that we're definitely doing this year. And but last year we were just like, all right, so this hasn't been done for a year and a half, and we're a little bit nervous that we just get a lot of complaints and not really know how to do what to do with them. So we came up with this approach. We first did a couple surveys in GPSA meetings, and then moved forward to target a specific issue. So last year, this is with our team. So yeah, it's up there. Here. Is Fran still on the GPSA? No. Okay. So we interviewed surveyed the attendees at a GPSA meeting. We said, what do you think the biggest issue facing our community is? And this was just an overview of graduate student mental health. Sorry, I'm going to move back since last spring. And there are certainly some challenges when it comes to mental health with our population. The lack of structure, little required face-to-face time with our supervisors, financial and academic pressure, and the fact that our community is smaller than the undergraduate population. So oftentimes the administration can focus on, you know, where the lion's share of their constituents are, which is the undergrad. So National Fund also found that counseling is pretty low among graduate students. But then doing some independent research with our committee, we found that there wasn't a lot of university data about graduate student mental health, kind of what the pulse was the current state. So to understand this issue better, we conducted a survey just on a day like today, and we had everyone at the GPSA meeting fill out a sheet of paper that answered what is the most compelling issue facing the graduate student community. Could I just move this up to keep looking back? Absolutely. That would really help. Okay. And we found that 76% of you guys said that mental health was a big issue. Number two, we said asked how you relaxed or de-stressed. And we found that 57% of the constituents own a gym membership to Cornell, and 63%, however, whether they had memberships or not, reported costs of membership being an issue. And the reason we included that was because there was a good, healthy dialogue about gym memberships last year, and maybe getting them funded is part of this whole effort. So our committee met, and we had a conversation about how to address this issue, mental health, and with the need for more data to better understand the current state, we created a new kind of data collection method called Dine and Discuss. And we looked at it as an opportunity not only, to promote really good, meaningful discussion among our community and cohort, but also is a key data collection opportunity to understand really what was going on. So we recruited, invited 60 graduate students and 15 administrators in mental health specific roles on campus. So that was Gannett, ears, et cetera, et cetera. And then we had the sample itself is pretty diverse. A lot of chemistry students and a lot of guys, I don't see them on this list, but for whatever reason, but otherwise pretty much diverse. And we had Vice President Murphy speak about mental health. So she came in and she spoke about something called the mental health wheel. I don't know, is anyone familiar with that? Show of hands. Okay, it's kind of the framework that the university is trying to use for their mental health efforts. So she talked about that. We had food catered by the Cornell Dining Group at the Big Red Barn. And food catered, funded by the graduate school. That was what I wanted to say. So huge thanks to DNews for sponsoring the event. And then we had, so the format of the event, we had the speech by Vice President Murphy, and then we broke out into discussion. And this was our key kind of, opportunity to learn more from our committee, or our community, excuse me. So each committee member was, we had a meeting, and we talked about really good focus group discussion meeting techniques. We had a rubric of 6 questions, and we had each table go around and address, these 6 different areas of mental health issues. And then we had the committee member take them. So the discussion prompts were like, how do you manage stress? What do you see as the obstacles to mental health? And what are the areas that you can do to improve mental health? Then I am a researcher trained in qualitative methods, and I sat down in the library for 2 days during a couple weekends in the spring and iteratively coded the data for thematic kind of directions. So So what came out? When we, under the question, how do you manage stress, we found that a huge amount of our constituents are using exercise to de-stress. So great, 70%. People said doing something relaxing, meditation, et cetera. Activities in the community, and then social things were 10%. So exercise overwhelmingly the way to de-stress. How do you manage stress? These comments were separated into exercise, social, relaxing, and keeping a routine. And these are some of the subcategories. But you'll see that exercise really was like the lion's share of how people in our community were dealing with stress. Obstacles to mental health, the largest, unpredictable and demanding work schedules. Health resources not being utilized, kind of understanding that there were resources out there, but not really sure how to go about using them. Difficulty making friends, interesting, across departments is something that came up a lot. Social norms emphasizing a lot of work or kind of time in the lab. And then other smaller, the fitness centers not conducive to graduate schedules, et cetera. So that's just kind of a sampling. And then within those seven categories, I found some other different kind of sub-points. So a little worse. And then existing factors that were conducive to mental health. So we did find a couple people who said, you know, look, we actually do have some good stuff going on. Supportive departments, advisor relationships were good, satisfactory experiences with Gannett, three people, and supportive advisors, which is kind of a salary. How can mental health be supported? So this is when we kind of moved in the conversation to say, okay, now that we know what the challenges are, what do you think are the solutions? So some really interesting stuff, social events, programming, preventative health behaviors, 22%. So that's, promoting exercise, doing yoga, fitness, whatever. Improving the academic environment, reducing some of these, norms of busyness and working all the time. More and better advisor support, promote utilization of health resources, so taking advantage of the great offerings we have here at Cornell. And then these were specific categories within those. And just so you guys know, this document was sent to administrators, so that's why there's all this nuance and detail. But I'm always happy to answer more questions over email if you want this whole. So the final product of this. The final product of this this project was a series of recommendations that we wrote up and submitted to the administration in the form of a resolution. So there are fourfold. First, make preventative health behaviors more accessible. So consider extending wellness memberships to graduate students similar to those offered to faculty and staff. Number two, education on graduate school, institutionalizing some sort of intro to grad school, advisor relationships, things like that. Number three, promote use of health resources, Gannett, increase use of ears and other counseling services. And then number four, not seven, is collect more and better data. So this, to give you guys some context, we submitted to the administration in the spring of last year in the form of a resolution with this document. Signed by Evan and Nicole and myself. And so that was, and for those of you who are new to graduate student government, this is one of our strongest tools for advocating for our community. The form of resolution is really effective. We write out what we're doing today. It's kind of the exercise that we go through. And this project is nothing else. Also, thank you, Mitch, for your time on the agenda today, because it's just a great example as a graduate student leader how you really can accomplish worthwhile things, here in your role. So after this was submitted, I got an email from President Sportman explaining some of the, his kind of off-the-cuff feedback to these things. And then I followed up with four different administrators, several deans, and Vice President Murphy, and we talked about their the progress that they've made on these four different recommendations. So this meeting was in August, and it was cool because I sat down and worked really hard last year to get this together and really understand the issues facing our community. And they've been working on this stuff. So a huge thanks to my committee and all of you guys for your support and for coming and everything. So my other purpose for today was to bring you guys up to speed on where the university is with these issues. So number one, make preventative health behaviors more accessible. We had a really good conversation about the gym memberships and making them free. And the way they're free for faculty and staff because of benefits packages that just aren't, unfortunately, extended or able to be extended to graduate students in the same way. So they encouraged us, as you'll see here, to consider including layering in a gym membership to the student activity fee, because the student activity fee is really where that's our student life kind of budget. And that's outside of academia, what, you know, wouldn't we believe as leaders would enhance our community's quality of life as a student here at Cornell. So they really made the case that that's, the gym membership is where that the student activity fee is where that kind of should reside. So that's a philosophical debate that we can have when that comes up. We negotiated this activity fee last year, but it's kind of a value statement to say that we as a community of leaders think that our community would benefit from exercise. We're inserting some value as opposed to culture, art, or you know what have you. So number two, education on graduate school. The university has made tremendous progress on this. Who was a new graduate student, or who was this year? Or went to graduate orientation. Did anyone experience it this year? Did you guys? Yeah? Anyone else? Okay, so it was unbelievable. So many big changes. So huge, huge thanks to the new Dean News and her whole team just did a really great job. So to know that there was, you know, real worthwhile progress being made on that was exciting. There are also new initiatives with the Center for Teaching Excellence that have certainly been blowing up my email box. It seems like there's something every week to do. So that's definitely new and kind of growing. Building steam. Number three, promote use of health resources. This is kind of where the administration said, you know, look, they've changed some of their hours to be later, so they have counseling hours that extend on Thursday evenings. And this bucket comes down to, you know, our social, you know, the fabric of our community. How are we talking to each other? Are we talking about working all the time or taking care of each other, going on, you know, group runs or supporting each other in a health sense? So that's kind of a qualitative factor that's not really, the administration feels that they're kind of doing their part. They're making the hours more accessible. The facilities are there, if we want to use them. So, and then number four, not seven, collect more and better data is the, there's another area of work stream that's been very vibrant. The administration just developed five surveys and totally different for different populations, different times. Students who are accepted but not attending, students in their first year, and then a quality of life survey is going to go out to us starting this year, I believe. Right, Evan? The survey is going to start this year? Do you know?
Jane might know more.
Okay, so keep an eye out. We should be getting that this year, and that's going to be, you know, if you get that in your email box, please take the time. We piloted, a bunch of us piloted them out last spring, and that's just a great way to collect more, you know, quantitative data about how we're doing. And then the fourth is an exit survey, because oftentimes people are very honest when they're leaving, so that'll be interesting. So there's a lot of work on that fourth bucket being done too. You know, when the administrators come this fall, I wanted to make sure that you knew the progress, because mental health is certainly top on their list. And I really, you know, felt some satisfaction after working, you know, really hard last year on this effort and seeing it be paid off by a resolution and substantive work being done towards each of these issues, which was pretty exciting to see. I think that just, you know, from my experience, this number three is kind of the ball's in our court. Is how is a community we want to take advantage of what's there or not. That's kind of all I have in terms of content. But I'd love any of your questions. Yeah, Liz.
For the first point, the administration was approached with extending the staff package to graduate students, but have alternative ways of promoting preventative health care been, has that been explored? Other than like just exploring sending the, that wellness package that staff and faculty can get, like other efforts to increase staff preventative health or make that accessible to us.
Other than gym memberships?
I'm sure there are, I'm not a health professional, but I'm sure that there are other ways that you can provide health.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, so I guess that kind of is, you know, everyone's different, certainly, and could benefit from different types of, you know, for me it's running, for someone else it could be going to a museum or painting. And so I guess that, I don't know that preventative health is explicitly addressed. Do you have anything to add?
I think the point up there is, The discussion we've been having before is something that several people have mentioned, both in our spring 2011 survey, was mentioned at that first meeting that Rebecca mentioned, came up again in time and discussed, was having free gym memberships for all graduate students. And faculty and staff have access to that because it's paid as part of their salary. So it's funded through HR. The portion of their salary goes directly into their pocket in the form of paychecks, and a portion of salary goes into a benefits package. Of course, for graduate students, that's not the case. The way that we would be able to accomplish that would be through the graduate professional student activities fee, that mandatory currently $81 fee that we all pay. If we were to have free gym memberships included as part of that, that would be a fairly significant increase. Even if we could do it with the money, my understanding is that they're worried about capacity. That if suddenly it went from the percentage of graduate students, I don't know that number off the top of my head, that have gym memberships, and suddenly it went to 100% have gym memberships, of course 100% are going to use the facilities, but even if 50% did, they wouldn't have the capacity to do it. So I think that this has to be part of a very broad discussion that might include long-term capital planning on the campus. Helen Newman, Teagle, our older facilities. Building non-academic facilities is not always a priority for a variety of reasons, not for any lack of willpower, but for other complicated reasons. So I think if we talk, this could be something as part of the GCI, we talk about what things look like 5 years out, 10 years out, maybe that should include a discussion of more and better gym facilities and exploring further the instead of, like, we pay $7 right now, that goes to free athletic tickets. Maybe we want to pay money to go into the facility side of things as well.
I guess my question was more, have there been any discussion with the administration of increasing other preventative health care? I understand the gym membership aspect, and I understand that there's the staff members and the faculty have that particular aspect as an option for healthcare. But I'm thinking that if the students were asking for more infrastructure around preventative healthcare, making that available for graduate students, there have been any alternatives discussed.
I guess my question is, what other behaviors are you talking about other than, because this is, we're talking exercise, you know, here in this first bucket. So I guess I'm confused on
well,
your
it says
your
preventative health behavior is more accessible. And so that just is related to gym membership, not anything like, I don't know, health, cancer screening or nutritional benefits or something along those lines. No, just exercise.
Well, I mean, I guess the comment, it was a common articulation during the Dine and Discuss event that exercise was a preferred way to relieve stress, and that there was a preference for having free, more and better access to gyms in particular. And then the nutritional aspect might be more under the Gannett, because we certainly have those available, nutritional counseling at Gannett.
On the Gannett topic, as probably most of you know, if not all of you know, they're replacing the facility. A lot of the issues that come out of Gannett right now is if we ask for more preventative services, whatever that may be, whether it's on physical health, mental health, health programming, health promotion, the Gannett facility is not just at capacity, it is far over capacity. People are quite literally, not an exaggeration, working in closets. They're working in closets. So the plan, and this is already happening, will be to relocate people out of that building temporarily, replace the building with a much larger facility that is going to be able to offer these sorts of things. So I suppose all I can say is yes, that's part of the discussion. Yes, it's not just about exercise, but it is about all of those other health activities. And I think we need to continue to keep advocating for ourselves to make sure that when they are doing these sorts of programs, that they're also targeted not just to 18-year-olds, but to 28-year-olds and 38-year-olds as well. The graduate population consists of those folks too.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. So there's an increase in the activity mm-hmm. if they do, presumably that's less than what we're going to pay per semester.
There are a bunch of, and that's kind of a bridge to cross when we get there. There are a bunch of different ways that you could structure it. You could give all graduate students 10 free passes. You could give all graduate students a 50% discount. And the graduate student activity fee doesn't change much per year. It'll increase a little bit, but the allocation of those funds is what we negotiate as a group and a community. So there are a host of different ways to structure it. And just to know that that's kind of where that would lie, that discussion lies, was a helpful thing to hear, for sure.
And we'll be doing that fee setting next year.
Get excited.
Yeah, so stick around.
I believe so, for the full year. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely, and that would we'd have to subsidize that somehow through the activity fee. Absolutely.
So I was just saying that this is great data and seeing that something like 66% of that number stress using exercise.
Mm-hmm.
70. I think that's something that we all should sort of focus on as we write up to GCI. So I'm just putting a plug in for mm-hmm. change. You're passionate about gym membership and passionate about mental health, you should join that community.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Matt.
And I was speaking with the Faculty Senate Chair of the Physical Education Athletic Committee, and they don't really realize some of our discontent with how the gym is structured right now, and so it sounds like after I talked to them about some of the challenges we have with graduate students with hours and costs and everything, it seems like they are pretty willing to try to also push for change from our perspective. So it seems like, you know, in the future here, it's something that we can kind of we can go forward with. So.
And to elaborate on that, this is kind of getting a little ahead in our agenda, but one of the spots that we haven't been able to fill on committees for a while is a liaison to the Faculty Senate Committee on Athletics and Physical Education, and Bill's going to take that on this year, so this might be something to encourage him to talk about.
And sharing my advice, so I can speak for
him. Yeah, definitely. Join committees. It's so important. I'm on the Mental Health and Welfare Committee, and that's how we bring our voice to bear on these broader issues when you're part of those discussions. So that's a great point. Thank you.
And Christine, did you have a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, in terms of the conversation that's actually offered, so if there are any reduction in graduate student fees, it's just to subsidize or reduce student activity fees.
Yeah.
So the administration is not proposing any coverage on their part.
Yeah.
Do you have energy or something on the screen?
Yeah, general question about the service. That's really exciting to be able to see data that you want to
really
see. But you did a lot of work coding and analyzing and sending it. Do you know how that data will become available to groups like ours?
I can tell you, send you my Excel spreadsheet if you'd like it.
That's great, but what about the
Excel, didn't you?
Sorry.
You must Excel.
For the support survey.
You must Excel him the data.
For the surveys that are coming up.
How much do you want to pay me?
you know the graduates are planning to analyze data similarly.
I don't. Oh, the data from the surveys. Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very comprehensively.
Great. And then
getting a nod from Jim.
Great.
Another
thank you.
Question. Yes.
I just have a question about sort of the scheduling with the gym.
Yeah.
I tried talking to various people on the mm-hmm. experience. Well, there's really nothing we can do. We're
sort of pushing me over a little bit, but it doesn't seem like they've collected any data on the gym usage, like at the different hours. It always seems like weight. It seems like there's just tons of people there, and then it's like 6 a.m. there's barely any.
They have, actually. They have that data. That was what was something we were discussing during the meeting. And I think Chris Korda piped up, or I forget who said this, but someone had a suggestion in the Big Red Barn email to say, no one's at the gym. You know, pick the glove up if you want to work out and not want to worry about signing up for a treadmill. So we actually have that data. And it's a matter of how, you know, to communicate it to our community.
So one of the big things in my program is that a lot of people complain to me about gyms closing or closing at 11:30 and 10, depending on the location and how like just a lot of us they are pretty late gym research and we're on campus, so 10 or something, and we want to go to the gym and they're all closed. And a lot of us come from university.
Yeah, we don't have to be able to sleep if you're working out at 11:00 at night.
I'm just saying that a lot of us came from the university for the gym for closing at like 2 or 3
a.m. Okay, certainly. So, if you actually check they're quite late. Kegel, which is the most central, is if you check the hours, there's quite a lot of offerings. But then the other component to that question, I think, is hours on off time, so during breaks and things. And that is something that they're looking into from a staffing point and something that is very tangible that we can accomplish. And there's work to be done there. So I'd say let's keep that going when Susan and the president come to raise that question, I think would be fruitful. Because they said that it's just a labor issue.
Thanks, Rebecca. We have to get moving. So if you have further questions for Rebecca, come chat with her. Thanks, Ian. Fantastic. And now we're going to have a presentation from Mary Lynn Cummings, who's the Director of Space Planning for the campus. And with her is Marty Rauker, who's the Director of Campus Life Enterprises, Enterprise Services, my apologies, and Leslie had to step out. So I'm going to give this to you. And let you take it away.
Thank you. It's always awful to start a presentation by apologizing. I do have a cold and a sore throat. I'm going to do my best to project. If I'm having trouble reaching some of you, please just shout out and I'll reinvigorate myself up here. I have a few slides. I'd like to try to move through them quickly so we have a little bit of time for discussion. I think we're allotted about 20 minutes here. I am the space planner here at Cornell. I've had this job for almost 5 years, and I feel like for most of it I've been managing this study I'm going to talk to you about today, but actually it just started about a year ago for real. We started this Ithaca campus space utilization study to look more closely at the way we're using space here. It's unusual for a large research institution to do a space study of the scope and depth that we're trying to undertake here. But there are a couple of factors that are contributing to the study that we're now undertaking, and I just wanted to mention them. These are like the context that we're under here on the campus. Okay, some of you aren't aware, you're new to campus. We had a company called Bain. Some of you have heard of Bain in the last year. We knew them when. They came in here 3 years ago and stayed for about a year to help us rethink the way we do some business, and very helpful in many respects, very hard-driving group of consultants. And I worked with them on some space utilization metrics. So we had entered this period of very intense financial discontent in late 08, early 09. And we brought in Bain to help us think through how we were doing business and try to do business smarter. I think we were really on the cutting edge of the university and trying to be more critical of our business processes, especially around space. This was unusual for a university to take on questions related to space and the cost of space. So Bain came back and said, they very superficial, very directional analysis. I wouldn't want to give their analysis more credence than it deserves. But what they said is, we probably have enough space here on campus at our current population with our current research investments. We probably don't have the right mix of space, and we have quality issues. But in terms of quantity, we probably have enough. So the upper administration heard that. We had entered, because of the financial circumstances in late 08, 09, we had entered a period of very much slowed down capital activity, which actually continues today. We are much less intensive in our capital investment than we were going into the late 2000s there. And that's important because when you're going to undertake a big space study, you need to slow down and look. It's hard to do it if you're trying to catch a moving train. If we were in a period of rapid development like we were when we were building WILE and the physical sciences building, it would be hard to assess where we're at because we'd be constantly changing through the time of the study. The other important thing that's going on now is we're looking at a new budget model for the campus, and that budget model is very likely going to be tied to space in some way, where units are financially responsible for the space that they occupy in some way. Probably not the actual true cost, but some model of cost that reflects the amount of space they're taking up. So the more you have, the more you're going to pay in some way. And this is new. It's somewhat unique in higher education, and it finally puts some incentive or disincentive, depending on how you think of it, into the system to regulate the use of space. Given all that, the university administration said to me about a year and a half ago, we need to do a study, and we want it to be big, and we want it to be as deep as we can make it. So let's take advantage of all these circumstances and go out and study the way we're using space on campus. So the study I could find is looking at all of the space here in Ithaca, non-residential, not residential, how we're using that space now, and what our current requirements are for space. We're not trying to project. A lot of space studies try to project ahead. You're going to grow. How much are you going to grow? How much space are you going to need? We're just looking at where we're at now. The reason we're doing this analysis is to inform the allocation of space and capital planning for space. This is not, the study in and of itself is certainly not funded to go out and make a whole lot of change out there. What it will do is inform future projects that come forward, like that Gannett project that we've seen and discussed. It informs that kind of project of how big it should be, when it should happen, is it a priority, those kinds of things. So just briefly on the schedule, this study has been going on for a while. We had a long review process to select a consultant. We selected a consultant named Pauline and Associates that all they do is higher education space planning. They don't build buildings. So they don't have some interest in like telling us we need a new building and then going out and getting a design contract for the building. All they do is space analysis. They're very skilled at benchmarking space in higher education throughout the United States. They have contacts at many of the institutions we consider our peers, and that's very helpful in accessing data. So they went under contract last December. They were here on the campus in the spring for 7 weeks, and they walked, one guy walked 7 million square feet of space. He went through 2 pair of shoes that I could gather. And since then, we've been in a period of having a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions, a lot of data gathering, and we're starting to move into a data analysis, data assimilation phase from all this. We're still trying to get data out of peer institutions. I have this consultant under contract through June of next year, about 9 more months. We have a project approved through December of next year, which gives us some time to embed any recommendations that come out of this study into the way we do business. I was very concerned to shut down the study when the consultant left and have the study literally shut down. And people say, well, that's very nice. We have a report. Let's move on. And everybody forgets to do anything from the recommendations. So we have all the committees and all the people involved on the hook through December of next year so we can make sure we follow through on some of the recommendations that we're expecting. Just to reiterate the scope, it's the Ithaca campus, it's non-residential. And we did walk a lot of this space. We didn't walk like animal space, human space, but it is in the study when we look at like peer benchmarking. There are four primary areas of scope related to institutional function. There's an academic research piece that Bob Berman, the Senior Vice Provost for Research, is leading up. There's a piece on administrative space, all the office space. That's actually where we have a lot of space in offices that are supporting an institution. That's being led by John Adams, who's Assistant Vice President of Planning and Budget. And he's being supported by the Associate University Architect, Andrew Mongrain. We're doing a lot of work on instructional space, and that's led by Laura Brown and Kathy Kambowski, the registrar. A lot of more in-depth analysis around not only classroom space, but other formal and informal learning spaces. And then the last category is kind of broad and a little bit eclectic, and this is where the graduate professional students fit in, which is all about different aspects of student services, and that's being led by Susan Murphy and Marty Rucker, who's in the day. For all these areas, we're looking at peer benchmarks. In particular, in research space, there aren't a lot of guidelines or standards or how big should it be? How big should a dairy plant be? How big should a synchrotron be? There aren't, you know, there is no guidelines. So we go out and benchmark these things, and that's the best guidance we have to tell us whether we're in what I like to call the bandwidth, whether we're in the right range for the institutions we consider our peers. For some of the other areas, there actually are more clear guidelines that have been developed, in some cases kind of scientifically. We can actually size classrooms based on how much we want them used, how much square footage for a desk, all that kind of thing. We can actually come up with pretty good numbers for how big, like how much square footage we need in lecture halls. There is a whole other piece of scope I'll just mention briefly that's about the administration of space here. As I mentioned, my position's pretty new, and we have a bunch of people touching space data, and we have a bunch of different policies and procedures around things like scheduling and what tools are used for scheduling. Some things are recommended, they're not mandated. When systems are recommended and not mandated, it's hard to get data when you need data. So we're looking at all those issues as well as these other things about the actual amount of space. So I want to touch on the scope related to the graduate professional students. This has been in the study as a scope item from the very beginning. BNUS had identified very early in her tenure as dean, she was new and I was kind of new, she had identified first, very dramatically, the shortfall of space in the administrative area for the graduate school. She transitioned over to the graduate school and said, there's something wrong over here. We're on two different floors, people can't see each other, people have to navigate between these different floors. There's some kind of space problem. I don't know if it's quantity, quality, adjacency, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem right. Then as she became dean, she further identified that there were these issues related to programming space that you all have identified through your own processes. And also she knows and experiences that we tend to treat the students differently depending on what department they're in, maybe what college they're in, what building they're in. If you're in a lab program, you might have a desk in a lab, you might have a desk in an office, you might not have a desk at all. Depending on the degree program, you might have a desk for part of your degree, and then you might have your desk taken away, or you might have to earn your desk, you don't get the desk when you first get here. There's like all kinds of different things going on out there, and that causes us concern. Are we doing the right things? Do we know what the right things are? Is anyone measuring the right things? This is an area that's actually, I would say, completely unexplored on campus. So we got it into the study so we could understand it better. We're very far from understanding, having the data, and then understanding what to do with it, but we want to make sure we get some data about this. These are the four key areas we identified in the scope, and we tried to write this as broadly as possible so we could kind of go anywhere. depending on where the discussion goes. We want to evaluate the quantity of administrative space. We want to evaluate this issue of administrative space. We want to evaluate all the issues around programming space. We want to evaluate the designated space that you get in your own program areas. And then we want to benchmark that relative to our peers. This part's a little tricky, but we're starting to get some data. Then we want to also explore some perceptual, subjective, more qualitative factors related to space. And I don't think these have been explored in any systematic way here, at least not in any kind of recent memory. We want to get you all together in some form, and this is to be determined, to have some focus groups to explore these factors that how you experience space here, how you experience space before you even came, whether thinking about space was even important to you before you came, how do you experience space now that you're here, how are you using space, what kind of spaces are you having an affinity for, what spaces are you finding lacking, how do you judge your space versus your colleague's space, even across within a department and then across departments. And if you're perceiving differences, how do you value those? Are they important to you? Are they in some way guiding any of your experience here at Cornell? Just to mention, I want to have a little follow-up discussion on those focus groups, but just to mention, this whole space study is under the oversight of a group that I chair called the Space Use Advisory Committee. And as you can see, that committee is mostly made up of Vice Provost and Vice President Sarah Hale Wicker, who has been on the committee from the graduate school. She's been on leave, and Sherry Mataro has been sitting in from her, but they're very active attendees in the Space Use Advisory Committee. And that's my contact information, but I want to just briefly follow up on this idea of the focus groups. So our consultant has been out collecting our data, trying to understand our data, and also out getting peer data. So this has been a very quantitative exercise so far. What they're starting to do now is to find more subjective questions to give to the peers, to do actual phone surveys with some peer institutions in many of our subject areas. Like you might have seen career services on one of those slides. So we're actually calling the schools we identify as our peers and saying, you know, tell us this, tell us that about your career services function. We're going to do the same thing related to the graduate professional programs. But one of the other things we want to do here is meet with you all and some and beyond you all, with you all as a population to key in on your key experiences around space. So the consultant is going to be here a few times this fall, including at the end of October. And I've started to have conversations with Mitch and Marty about how we might organize some focus groups to pull people in and start this conversation and get your understanding. One of my reasons for being here today is to start to stimulate that thinking. It's sort of my understanding that the focus can often be on key types of space, like the programming space, but there's many other spaces that are important to you all. And we want to stimulate some thinking around that, get you thinking, you know, where do I go and sit every day? Is it comfortable? Does it feel like the right space for my discipline area? That kind of thinking will really help us understand what's going on here and then potentially implement change over time. Any comments, questions?
So we have just a few minutes for some comments or questions.
Did your study also take into account things like climate control and acquisition?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's come up so far. It's come up mostly around instructional space because often we get into conversations that are about the technology in instructional space, and it never fails. Somebody in the room says, I just like the room to be, you know, temperature controlled before I worry about the type of projector or podium or that kind of thing. So If it's an important issue for graduate professional students, I would hope it would come up through the focus groups. We are aware, you know, it kind of speaks back to what Bain told us. Sometimes it's not about the quantity of space, it's about the quality, and quality might be human comfort factors. And we have a very wide range of buildings around campus. And we may need to, in terms of our capital planning, we have to think about sort of getting all the buildings to some sort of acceptable baseline. We should have buildings that work for people as a sort of fundamental. And having all these conversations helps us to identify where the gaps are. Dark at night?
Yes.
That's not directly within my my scope, but it's certainly a worthy comment. I recently walked to my car after dark and was absolutely astonished at how dark it was. I can certainly bring that to a peer, the campus planning office, to think about and address.
So Mary Lynn's space is internal inside the building, minus what she's listed.
But I am I'm on the campus planning committee, and that's an important interface. The building then at some point become outdoors, but we all move in and out. So I will bring that to the campus planning committee.
Mary Lynn, let's talk about that. There is annually a walk that's coordinated by the campus. Please check on like in fall. And if you're interested in being involved in that, because sometimes that involves being buildings, but it's also the location of blue light that course once to go with the landing of the campus. So that happens every year for the campus, maybe not so much. I don't know if it's happening now, but certainly CUP is having it.
Thank you, Marty. And I actually just noticed, too, the senior police have a mailbox for lights out that they check all the time. They want lights out reported. Thank you.
I was just wondering how you were currently thinking of doing your sampling for the focus group?
Well, honestly, we have not gone that far in our planning yet, but we're hoping to kind of do a wide-ranging call. We're not doing invite only. I'd like to have full rooms. So I'm hoping, I mean, obviously any population we get is a sample, but it'll be biased by all the people coming, not by inviting people, I guess.
That makes sense.
We're having, in discussions, Eric and Nicole and I have been meeting with Marty and Mary Lynn and others somewhat regularly about this, and we're hoping to potentially put together an ad hoc committee or something. We saw for discussion among us, spread, for to help them with the space utilization and to best engage graduate and professional students. So I think it makes sense for us to kind of split up among, you know, in arts and sciences, you know, space might be a little bit differently used in biological sciences and physical sciences. It's a little bit different, and the professional schools are definitely different from all of those. So we'll definitely seek input from the group as we move forward in that. And we unfortunately have to keep moving. So this will be a topic
people
of...
People can feel free to contact me, too. I'm glad to answer any other questions.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary Lynn.
Thank you.
All right. So now moving only slightly down our agenda. We need to approve the minutes from September 10th. You all should have received them on Friday from Nicole. Are there any changes or amendments? I guess those are the same thing. Are there any amendments to the minutes from September 10th? Great. Is there any opposition to passing and approving the minutes of September 10th? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Fantastic. Move to reports of the officers and the committees. I promise this won't take 35 minutes. Just a quick update on my behalf. We had our first meeting of the GCI ad hoc committee last Monday. You should have all received a couple emails from me about space changes.
And we're planning at the moment to meet every other Monday, so our full meetings are will overlap every other Monday with alternate. Thank you. So I'm still trying to find a place for us to meet continuously. It might be the BRB, so we can get cheap beer and free soda drinks while we discuss. And so basically what we talked about last time were the timeline of how we're going to move forward with this and some kind of focused areas to work on. So what we're planning to do is throughout this fall semester really conduct our research and finish that process, and then have some town halls that hopefully will coincide a little bit with the space utilization, because that's informative for our processes as well. And then we'll kind of write up the topic area of reports in the spring, and then we'll present it to the Board of Trustees and to the administration starting in late March and continuing on through the rest of the year. So that's the progress. We only had, we had a great turnout of all the interested people. We had about 10 members there, and we really want as many people as we can to get involved. There's plenty of work to do, and it is interesting. As you see as we go on through the agenda, I've asked for a budget for this group, and if the body passes it, we will have food at the meetings too. So again, every other Monday, look for emails from me. Now we'll move on to committee staffing report from Eric.
Okay, so we had our committee staffing meeting last Wednesday, as all of you who applied for committees may have been notified about that. No? If not, send me an email and I'll get to the bottom of it. And so we did really well, I think. We filled most of our seats. We still have a few that are left. The Big Red Barn Advisory Board, that's going to be a big one. Academic freedom and professional status of the faculty, going down the list. We need a female member for the Public Safety Advisory Committee. So if anyone is interested in any of these, please get a hold of me. And as we sort of mentioned earlier, Rebecca mentioned it, that the University Council on Mental Health and Welfare, we still need two members for that. And we're looking for a law student, preferably for codes and judicial, and we need voting members, GPSA voting members, for campus welfare and campus infrastructure committee. We had a lot of interest in campus infrastructure, but we need one of those two seats to be a voting member, and we didn't get from voting members. So there are still a few spots out there. If anyone's interested, please give me an email. It's EAS56, and you can find me on the website too. So, all right, thanks.
Hey, thanks. And just to clarify, these campus infrastructure, welfare, and codes and judicial are part of the university assembly, and so as part of our allocation of graduate and professional students to these seats, one of them has to be a voting member on each one. So we need one of the 19 of us to serve on each of these.
It's tons of fun, guys.
It really is. You do make substantive changes.
And it's not really any, it's not a huge time commitment. Usually it's only a few hours a month. So it's a great way to get involved. So give me a shout.
Thanks, Eric. Bill, do you have anything from appropriations?
Just want to say thanks, everyone, for passing the budget last 2 weeks ago. Sorry, I was out of town, couldn't be at that meeting. Problems, questions about that?
Thanks. And I don't think Marcus had anything. If you do have items that you'd like to go in the buzz, please send them to Marcus or myself, and we'll make sure they get in there. Any events for graduate students? Any topics that you think would be of importance, whether it be campus safety things or anything else, just send me an email and we'll see about getting them into the buzz. Vinay, do you have anything at the moment?
Just want to say we have our first meeting coming next week on Thursday, and the deadline for the first round of funding is this Friday at 4 o'clock, so if you're planning to submit either a special project request or an annual budget, please get it in before 4 p.m. this Friday, because I know some forms need signatures from faculty and staff. So please try to get that in on time, since we won't be taking names in that way. And then we have to wait for another month. So, so we'll be meeting next week, and then you'll hear the decision probably 10 days or so after that about the allocation.
Great, thanks, Nate. Kristen or Giovanna, do you have anything?
We worked on dinner like 4 minutes in the semester. First off, we're going to be graduating out on Friday. Starting on the 12th.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, meeting, I said we were going to discuss the budget here, but next meeting we'll discuss our charter and our, like, sort of the events that we are trying to do, but not the budget.
Okay. Thank you both. So, Evgeny, do you have anything?
So we can't do our first meeting, so we're going to schedule it for next week, I think. But we'll schedule out an email to see if any of them come by, and then I'll have more updates following.
Okay, thanks. Fantastic. Now we'll move on to new business. Our first resolution of the evening is a resolution 4, and this is in support of what Matt outlined for us last time about the inequality, if you will, of the any dining or meal plan on campus for graduate and professional students, and as part of his work on the dining committee recommendation. So, Matt, do you want to introduce us a little bit more, maybe just refresh us what the conclusion was last time?
So basically, this resolution sort of outlined what the inequality in dining options were for undergrad, for graduate students in comparison to undergrad faculty and staff. And so there's several whereas clauses talking about sort of the history of that. And then basically it's just a resolution that outlines our support of Cornell Dining creating a new plan for graduate students that provide the reasonable tax discount for all Cornell Dining purchases. They allow students to add money, like as in a debit card program with a low minimum balance of $50, and includes additional discounts for purchases made at the Big Red Barn. Currently, that's at 5%. I was trying to negotiate something higher, but they declined to do that. Basically, just a resolution voicing our support of their efforts.
Great. Thanks. And you all should have received this as part of Nicole's email on Friday as well. I can scroll to a particular part of the text if you want to see it or propose an amendment. So thanks, Matt, for introducing this. We'll now open this up for discussion. Is there any discussion on Resolution 4? Liz?
I don't know if this is an amendment or anything, but should initiatives under the first resolve be capitalized? Is that the title of it?
I'm going to consider that moved to amend. Is there any opposition to taking that space out? Great. I will do that. Is there any further discussion on this amendment? Or amendments like this? Great. Seeing no further discussion, we'll close it and move on to a vote. All those with green placards that are in favor of passing Resolution 4, supporting the dining, Cornell Dining Initiative, please raise your green placards. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 7, 12, 13, 14. 14. All those opposed? Fantastic. Resolution 4 passes with a slight amendment. Thank you. All right, moving down the list, we will move on to Resolution 5 that I introduced. And this is just asking for a budget for the GCI ad hoc so that we can both recruit people for town hall events and recruit our own members to attend and talk about the GCI for food at the meetings. So I've asked for $1,000, and this would come out of the cash rollover, which is essentially kind of our savings, which, Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, is about $7,000. That does not include the annual savings we have for the Ivy Summit that we'll be hosting in 2018. So out of that $7,000, essentially I've asked for $1,000 to undertake the Graduate Community Initiative update, which again is kind of our, 5-year in the future looking plan for the graduate and professional student community. Does that sound about right for the numbers?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is essentially would be coming out of that. And so what we envision for that particular money is spending about $150 on various town hall events that focus on the various topic areas that we've covered in the GCI update. Those include things like graduate community center, the topics that were in the last GCI, student mental health, housing and transportation, the various issues that were identified last time and that we're going to continue to work on. So we'd have a town hall on each of those. I haven't allocated anything yet, it's up to you. I've asked for $150 per event and then $250 for meeting food, as we'll be meeting throughout the year. What I've asked for, the resolution, if anyone's curious to see it, says almost the exact same. So that being said, we'll open for discussion. Is there any discussion on Resolution 5? Liz? Yeah?
Phil, I think you made an offhand comment about this, but for the town hall meetings, that actually seems like a very small number. For what, are you just planning on serving coffee, or is it food? I would almost suggest that number for 5 town halls be increased.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's only like 2 sandwich pies, which is...
That's true. I don't know, actually. I base a little bit on what the student advocacy committee usually does for their town halls, which seem to be pretty successful, serving full dinner or a light full dinner like we do here is certainly a possibility, especially with healthy foods. So I definitely entertain an amendment or a motion to amend that for a larger amount.
Well, maybe just opening that up for a discussion. If that's possible, or do I have to?
I mean, you can propose an amendment and we can talk about it.
Let me stop my four things back. I would propose maybe to 200 per town hall.
Okay.
I don't know if that sounds dramatic, sorry, but.
Okay, so. Okay, so I'm seeing an amendment, or a motion to amend the resolution, which I will now go to, so that this now reads $200 per event for food, which then bumps the total requested amount to $1,250. Does that make sense to everyone? So this is now the... Oops. Yeah, that's right, right? I'm just a planner. I'm not a mathematician. That's the proposed amendment. Is there a second? Or motion, I'm sorry. Is there a second?
Second.
Great. Second by Trevaney. Is there any discussion on this motion to add more money for the town hall event? No discussion.
I can comment about...
You beat Matt too.
When it comes to the budget for the student advocacy committee, I kind of did the same thing where I looked back at what previous years that after town hall meetings, and 150 does seem on the low side, but there hasn't been as good. So this year I think we'll find out, and we have a lot of town hall meetings, what the right number is. If you do the big red bond, you can get, I think,
they talk about cheap pizza for $20. You can get things delivered, you can get coffee and snacks for like $60. But again, how much you need is not clear. So I think $200 sounds more reasonable, but I don't think anyone really has that number about what the perfect amount is. We will find out. So maybe it's a good idea to err on the side of a little more, because 150 is definitely not too much, but I think by the end of this year we'll all know.
Okay.
It's hard to decide right now.
And Matt, you are next.
So yeah, it looks like you have 200 presents for food. I'm just wondering about advertising costs. So email is free, but a lot of graduate students don't read email that isn't directly related to their work or their social events. So I'm just wondering if we're going to print any flyers or anything. I think getting really good participation and really good discussion from the town hall meetings is what's really going to improve this GPI. So I think trying to make sure that's adequately funded is very important. So maybe putting in something for advertising. I don't know if that's something we've done in the past. Because I think I do see posters for like Brad Dynamic, if we're not Brad Dynamic, but like Brad Ball and things like that. I wonder if that's allocated, if there's money allocated for those events. So maybe someone who's on the programming board could speak to that.
Means that. Adrian, you had your hand up.
Do you have like expectations of the numbers of people that can become happy based on
Previous experience, somewhere between 30 and 40 might be optimistic. I don't know. Liz, you had your hand up.
I wanted to add on to the discussion and saying that if I remember correctly, when Rebecca was going over the town hall meeting, she actually said that it was, I think, close quarters to how much money you guys spent. It was almost a little bit.
You mean for last year, too?
I think for last year, when she was discussing that event. So
for last year, there wasn't, I don't think we were at the town hall meeting.
Or the
dine-in stuff. The dine-in stuff was very expensive, but that was a good point on dine-in.
Okay.
So that we barely, I think, had enough to do, I think, $2,000. But the coin on dine-in, I think, their dinner is very expensive. But so that option is probably not on the table. But the cheaper alternative, you guys aren't voting on this yet, right? Today.
The budget?
The budget. Or
this budget.
You are voting on today?
Yeah. Right. Okay. I hope so.
we could outline more. Like, I could look back a couple of years, what humanity can be spent on town halls from 2 years ago.
Is there any way to, I'm sorry, I know that I'm jumping the line here.
No, it's okay. You're still talking.
So my question is, if we run the resolution today and say 200 doesn't turn out to be enough,
mm-hmm.
is there any way that we can potentially get more funding for that, like bring another resolution to the table, or?
I think we can.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that healthy food is a good way to get people out. Mm-hmm. Coffee, also for graduate students, is really good, and alcohol. but I also understand that if we're talking about advertisement and healthy food, I'm not even sure that $200 would be enough for 30 to 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
I have very little experience with that, but for the comms department when we have events for us, that's like, again, like I said, two platters from Mandible,
mm-hmm.
not a lot.
I think we should, since there's so much doubt here, everyone decide of budgeting more money from the state.
Okay.
And we should just budget at what it's at, and if we need more money later on, and we get a cost accessible screen, we increase funding for a great turnout, then we can bring it up again. But to go on and just step putting up arbitrary numbers seems like an error right now. So this is a good starting point, and we can build off that if your plan is very successful.
And it's hard, if I can elaborate too on Bill's point, it's hard to know exactly how many people will turn out. The last GCI was in 2007, and I don't think there's anyone here that remembers that. Speak up if you do. I don't think we did too many. Thank you. I don't think we did too many events for the graduate community to come and participate in, just one. So this is a bit of an increase, and we can certainly go back and look at what the numbers were of those who turned out and give you a little bit more clarity, but it's a bit hard to budget based on that. Matt?
Also, I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, but you, from the first couple of town halls, you could do more than $200 and then come back and ask for more money. You're not stuck to the $200 per, you're stuck to the $1,000 for the whole thing, right? So,
technically, yes. Okay. So again, we're still discussing this motion to increase this to $200 per event. So is there any further discussion on that motion? Please?
Could this be a friendly amendment?
Yeah.
Do we need to change the amount in line 11 to 1250?
Right, right. I've considered that a part of the motion. I'm getting greedy here. Is there any further discussion on this motion? If not, we'll go ahead and vote on this motion. And again, this increases it from what I've asked for in this from $150 per event to $200. That increases the total amount to $1,250. So we'll go ahead and vote on that. Vinay, yes?
Is that R6 or R6?
It is R5. My apologies. We'll get to that after we vote on this. Thank you. All right. So all those with green placards, please. All those in favor, apologies, of this motion to increase the budget amount, please raise your green placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. All those opposed? Great. Motion passes. Great. So as it's on the table now, we can, is there any opposition to changing this to a 5 like it should be? Seeing none, I will do that. All right. Now we're back to discussing this resolution. Is there any further discussion on the resolution as amended? Great. Seeing no more discussion, we'll move to a vote on this. All those in favor of Resolution 5, which requests a budget for the GCI Ad Hoc Committee, please raise your green placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Great. Any opposed? Fantastic. Resolution 5 passes. I will be sure to take into account the concerns and comments that have been brought, and I'll come back with more information next time. Now we will move to a discussion on Resolution 6, which outlines changes to the GPSA FC funding guidelines, and I will let Vinay take that over.
Okay, thank you, Mitch. So just by way of background, there were a number of groups this year that wanted to appeal their funding allocations, a decision that was made by FC back in May for their annual budgets. And so just for the people who are not familiar with the funding guidelines, it explicitly states, describing the appeals process, where groups may appeal either an inadequate allocation made by the FC to their annual budgets or an SPR, a special project request, or they may appeal a violation of the funding guidelines. So if we haven't followed the rules that are explicitly stated in the funding guidelines, the organization or the group can appeal on that basis. Now, in the last meeting, I said that, you know, this appeals process is something that was not really available through our website. We did talk about actually being able to appeal as a group if you felt that you were unfairly treated by the SC. But there was no actual means for you to do that. So there was no form that you could actually fill out and submit to us through our website. So, and over the last 5 or 6 years, I think it was discouraged for people to actually appeal. This is my understanding. It's only my first year here as chair of SC. So what I am proposing is an amendment of the funding guidelines, specifically to the section that describes the appeals process, And just to summarize what's being shown on the slide is that we're trying to do away with appealing an inadequate allocation. And this is something I alluded to last meeting, where you could now submit an SPR if you felt that funds were inadequately allocated to the group. Okay, so if you didn't receive enough money in your annual budget or a previous SPR, the fastest way for you to get more money is to actually submit another SPR. And this is certainly what we are recommending going forward. However, if you feel that we have violated one of the terms in the funding guidelines, that your group actually is entitled to more money because of a funding guidelines violation by us, this is an error on our part as the SP, then you are allowed to appeal. And the way we are suggesting that you appeal is, first of all, seeking an informal resolution to this funding violation by contacting the chairperson myself this year, and then seeking an informal resolution to the situation. Failing that, then I can provide you with an appeals form, which I do have, and then you can go through the process of filling out that appeals form, actually explicitly stating which sections of the funding guidelines have been violated by us, and then we review that at the next meeting. And if at that meeting no resolution is reached between you and us, then that moves ahead to the Appropriations Committee, so Bill's group will look at it, and failing that, then it will be brought forward to the entire Assembly at one of our meetings to be voted on and discussed. So, so essentially what I'm proposing is an amendment to the appeal section of the funding guidelines, just describing what essentially what I just talked about. So if we look at point 3 here, striking sub-point 1, inserting 2 new sections, the organization is advised to seek an informal resolution. That's point 1. And then again, point 2 is that if the informal process doesn't work, then we can actually go through and fill out the appeal form, which is a lengthy process. So this is actually a faster way of getting about a resolution. And then, and finally, in point 2 there at the bottom, the amendments to any funding guidelines, this is a small point that doesn't involve everybody, but we will make the presentation like we are today, the initial presentation about amendments to the funding guidelines, one meeting before the vote has to be passed. So essentially we will be voting on resolution 6, which I'm proposing here at the next GPSA meeting in 2 weeks. So I'm happy to take any questions if there are any regarding resolution 6. The informal process will just mean we, if there is an error, in fact, then we just admit that it's our fault,
yeah,
and we provide the money. It's very simple, and it's probably the best way to do it. It's the fastest way. So you don't have to go through this form of appeals process, which can be quite lengthy, requiring filling out of a big form and things like that. So
that's Eric has a...
I'd just like to motion to extend the meeting for 5 minutes. Would that be sufficient?
I think so.
Five.
Is there any second for that? Great. Is there any opposition to extending the meeting for 5 more minutes? Fantastic. May I please continue?
Okay, so any more questions about Resolution 6? Why would someone appeal an allocation to the annual budget?
Yeah.
What are some of the reasons?
What are some examples of where you would prefer to have
sure.
a project rather than
right. So typically where we would underallocate would be things like events. You know, your organization might know that, well, we have, you know, we want to invite a speaker or whatever, but you don't know how many people are going to be coming, attending the seminar, for example. So you don't quite have a good idea of the budget for that seminar or that event or whatever it is. So what we suggest is that you submit an SPR specific to that event. So we wouldn't allocate that money up front as part of the annual budget if we didn't have all the details. And essentially the details would be things like, you know, the event dates and, you know, what was the budget for that event.
The annual budget, but frankly, if I'm wrong, usually requires a lot less information than the...
Exactly. But if it has to do, if it pertains to specific events, and there are groups that request money for specific events in their annual budget without providing adequate information. So that's just one example. But there are a number of others as well. So. So in that case, we wouldn't allocate the full amount requested. We would say, okay, well, come back to us with an SDR and give us more details. So people might appeal that for some reason if they, for some reason, didn't want to submit an SDR. But yeah, I can't see that being the case. So by and large, I would say that the appeals process really applies to violation of the funding guidelines. And I think that's not very clear the way the funding guidelines are worded right now. Groups have this impression that they can appeal an inadequate funding allocation decision. So this is something we're trying to get away from.
Thanks, Vinay. Are there any other questions?
Any other questions? You can email me, and my email's on the website. Yes.
Okay, thanks. And we'll bring this up at our next meeting, which is in 3 weeks' time, not 2 weeks. And now we'll move on to open forum. Lauren Ritter, who is the president of the Student Union Board, had to leave. She couldn't stay for our extended meeting. So she'll come with us next time and talk about the Bear's Den. So is there anyone else who would like to speak in open forum? Seeing none, is there any opposition to adjourning the meeting? Fantastic. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
I'm learning my rabbit.
This one?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.